This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If you weaken the U.S. dollar, that means that there'll be less purchasing with dollars of African exports. So African exporters won't be able to sell as much and get as much for their products.
That's Kevin Gallagher, professor of global development policy at Boston University, on the possible fallout if the U.S. Congress cannot agree on a deal soon for raising the country's debt limit. Details coming up. Also, Sudan awaits the latest effort to halt military clashes so civilians can seek aid or flee the fighting. And an outbreak of cholera has killed up to a dozen people near the South African capital. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. With a deadline for implementing a ceasefire looming, Sudan's capital awoke today to the sounds of airstrikes and anti-aircraft fire for the 37th consecutive day. Clouds of black smoke billowed from a fire in the city of 5 million. Streets were nearly abandoned, most shops remained closed, and only intermittent water and power supplies were available in sweltering heat. Volker Pretheus, the United Nations envoy to Sudan, warned of the growing ethnicization of the military conflict amid concerns about the potential impact on neighboring states who are trying to cope with waves of refugees from the fighting. During a briefing before the UN Security Council opened a meeting on the conflict, Pretheus says ethnicization risks engulfing the country in a prolonged conflict with implications for the region. The United States and Saudi Arabia said Saturday the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces signed a 7-day ceasefire that is to take effect today at 9:45 p.m. The agreement came after days of talks in Jeddah, which earlier produced an agreement between the two sides on protecting civilians and easing the flow of humanitarian assistance to those affected by the conflict. Earlier ceasefire deals have floundered amid accusations of both violations. Reporter Sidamed Ibrahim has this report from Khartoum.
For more than 20 days, the citizens of Khartoum have been suffering very difficult conditions after closing the main markets due to the war between the Sudanese army and the rapid support forces. Most of the citizens complain about the lack of basic needs, like bread and food, whose prices have become very expensive and difficult for poor people to buy. While the security situation is getting worse due to some looting accidents of shops and stores, with international warnings of a humanitarian disaster in Khartoum, people hope that the conditions will improve so that they can return to live their normal lives in peace. For Voice of America, Sid Ahmed Ibrahim, Khartoum.
Unlike earlier truces that fell apart or never took hold at all, the U.S. and Saudi said this one is different because it was signed by the parties and will be supported by a ceasefire monitoring mechanism. According to the text of the agreement the U.S. released, warring sides were to use the 2 days before it takes effect Monday night to inform their respective forces about it and instruct them to comply. Both sides also conveyed to the Saudi and U.S. facilitators their commitment not to seek military advantage during the 48-hour leading up to the ceasefire, a U.S.-Saudi statement said. The French news agency AFP reports that gunmen carried out an attack in eastern Burkina Faso that left more than a dozen people dead, the latest in a week-long stretch of violence that has killed more than 70 people. AFP cited local sources and said a security source confirmed the attack yesterday on the outskirts of Kompayanga, the capital of the province of the same name. The victims are believed to be mostly shepherds. Several other attacks have each claimed at least 10 lives since last Monday. Burkina Faso has been struggling with a jihadist insurgency that swept in from neighboring Mali in 2015. A few weeks ago, Zimbabwe's Reserve Bank introduced a cryptocurrency using digital gold coins. The value of the currency, it said, was supported by gold owned by the bank. But financial experts are dubious, and the Reserve Bank's plan does not seem to be working. Darren Taylor reports.
The Reserve Bank says that digital gold tokens can be used as a means of payment and to store value. It says the cryptocurrency will slow demand for US dollars, which they blame for driving high inflation. South African cyber finance expert Jan Vermeulen says Zimbabwean banks are selling the tokens in both foreign currency and local dollars. The banks, he says, are creating specific accounts, known as e-gold wallets or e-gold cards, to hold the digital tokens. Unsurprisingly, says Vermeulen, there hasn't been a lot of demand for the accounts.
What this strikes me as is not really a cryptocurrency. It's more like a digital Krugerrand. I can't find the blockchain. I can't find any public record of transactions. And I have no way of verifying that there's actually gold behind these tokens. There are a bunch of red flags here.
Economist at the Friedrich Naumann Foundation in Harare, Fungisai Sithole, says if the Reserve Bank is to be believed, it has bought 140 kilograms of Zimbabwe's 350 kilograms of gold reserves to back the cryptocurrency.
We are taking away from our reserves, which means this will also have a long-term implication as our reserves continue to deplete, as it were. We are trying to put a bandage on a wound that is really, really infested and on an economy that is really, really degenerating. So I really think we are trying to fix our monetary situation, our currency situation, without really dealing with the underlying dynamics that we need to deal with as a nation.
In a statement on May 12th, the Reserve Bank said it had sold gold tokens to the full value of the 140 kilograms of gold it had in storage, proving that the public trusted its cryptocurrency. But like the International Monetary Fund, Sithole is convinced Zimbabwe's economic problems will only be solved once there's political reform, not by introducing a mysterious cryptocurrency. She says demand for the gold tokens is low because citizens don't have faith in them.
We've had the gold coins since July 2022, and they have not worked. They suffered the trust deficit. At least they were better because they were physical. And if you're in Zimbabwe, if you're to get a physical gold coin, at least you have something, you know, to assure you that I can trust the process.
Sithole says Zimbabwe's government is trying to control the markets, which is impossible. The path to a stable currency and economy, she insists, lies chiefly in free and fair elections. Other economists say even if the gold cyber coins become popular, they'll eventually be susceptible to the same volatility plaguing the Zimbabwean economy. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South African health authorities have warned citizens to take extreme precautions as an outbreak of cholera has killed up to a dozen people and raised fears that it could spread to other parts of the country. Residents of the most affected township, Hammanskraal, just outside Pretoria, have been cautioned not to touch tap water, giving strong suspicions the infection is coming out of their faucets. Tusokumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The cholera outbreak has brought grief to many families and triggered panic across the country. Hammanskraal Township is the worst affected, with residents commuting daily to Pretoria for work and other needs. There are fears it could easily spread to the capital. Dozens have been hospitalized. The local Jubilee Hospital says it has treated over 100 people showing symptoms of cholera such as diarrhea, vomiting, fever and dehydration. Nomantu Nkomo Ralehoko, a member of the Gauteng Provincial Government's Executive Council responsible for health, spoke to journalists during her visit to the affected areas.
We are going to the communities just to make sure that they drink clean water. and they must boil their water when they are drinking it. And the municipality is assisting us with the trucks that are coming to deliver water in their area.
Meanwhile, the communities in Hammerskraal Township are angry over the outbreak and loss of loved ones. For years, they have complained about the various illnesses caused by their visible and clean water, but the calls fell on deaf ears. South Africa's neighbors like Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Malawi have also reported cholera cases, raising concerns that the disease could jump borders. In 2008, South Africa had up to 12,000 cases of cholera after an outbreak that killed thousands in Zimbabwe. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Thuso Khumalo.
The World Health Organization says 24 countries, including a growing number in Africa, have already reported cholera outbreaks this year, up from 15 in 2022. Conflict zones and areas with high levels of poverty have been hit hard, and WHO said last week that the short-term outlook for controlling the disease is bleak amid shortages of the vaccine. WHO and partner organizations temporarily switched to using one dose of a vaccine that is normally given as two doses, but they still ran out last December. The Gavi Alliance, an international body focused on childhood vaccination, says there are enough doses to meet emergency demand, but not for preventative use. Gavi said 48 million vaccine doses had been used in the last 2 years, 10 million more than in the entire previous decade. Cholera cases and deaths jumped last year as the deadly disease spread to new regions, particularly conflict zones and areas with high levels of poverty. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs, and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. U.S. President Joe Biden cut short his trip to Japan to meet today with House of Representatives Republican leader Kevin McCarthy to resume negotiations over raising the U.S. debt ceiling. Negotiators for the two sides met for more than 2 hours Sunday, while Biden and McCarthy spoke by phone in a call each side described as positive. Kevin Gallagher, professor of global development policy at Boston University, says failure to raise the debt limit, a cap on the total amount of money the federal government is authorized to borrow via the U.S. Treasury, could have a devastating impact on the rest of the world. He tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that Africa is already at a tipping point and a default would be the final straw for many African countries.
Boy, would this be a big shock. It would hurt in a number of ways. So first, if we don't lift the debt ceiling, it'll really hurt confidence in the U.S. economy. Investors will pull their money out of dollar-denominated assets and pull their money out of the United States, and that will put downward pressure on the U.S. dollar. So failure to lift the debt ceiling will ruin the confidence of international investors in the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar, which will depreciate it or weaken it. If you weaken the U.S. dollar, that means that there'll be less purchasing with dollars of African exports. So African exporters won't be able to sell as much and get as much for their products. They need foreign exchange now for growth more than ever and to be pay back their already unsustainable dollar-denominated debts around the world. The other thing that will really hurt African countries is that in an attempt to try to bring dollars back into the U.S., there'll be upward pressure on the United States interest rate. We'll probably raise it even more. That'll have even more grave consequences for African countries because it'll make the cost of borrowing even more expensive. For most African countries, it's in between 8 and 11%, which is very unsustainable. With all due respect, in the current environment, African countries are not going to be growing at 8% over the next few years. The IMF sees it at 3% in the best cases. So this would be a real blow to the rest of the world, and Africa in particular.
The first point you made about exports with the African countries, Are you saying that if the U.S. does default, that we would probably then be forced to buy fewer, if not any, exports from African countries, and therefore that hurts them because we wouldn't be buying from them?
Big time. One, we slide into a recession, so we're not buying as much because our economy's not doing well, and the value of our dollar will be weaker. And both of those things translate into buying less African goods.
Kigali, we are here for the BAL Finals. For the best of African basketball. The Sahara and Nile Conference delivered their verdict. The top eight teams on the continent are chasing the Holy Grail. Who will be the next BAL champion? It's game time.
A young Ugandan man orphaned a childhood dreams of playing in U.S. Major League Baseball and has turned his training into a social media sensation. 18-year-old Dennis Kasumbo, who earns a living by cleaning cow sheds, can't afford professional equipment, so he uses old tires and oil drums filled with water to train. He recently got news that will bring him one step closer to his dream, as Halima Atumani reports from Wakiso District in Uganda.
Opportunity often comes to those who are prepared, and Ugandan baseball player Dennis Kasumba, who grew up as an orphan, lives up to this adage. Training three times a day, Kasumba, who has become a social media sensation among baseball fans, has created his own gym, improvising with everything that can make him a better and stronger player. Kasumba recalls one of his videos that went viral, earning him a spot on the U.S. television show SportsCenter. I had my phone pinging and wondered what was going on. Little did I know my video had been played on the biggest television stations in America. He says, as I was walking to the field, colleagues called me out saying, SportsCenter was relaying your video. Have you watched it? I told them, my family doesn't own a television set. He is starting to see his efforts pay off. Kasumba has received an invitation to play with a U.S. team, the Frederick Keys, in the state of Maryland, in an amateur league over the summer season starting June 1st. He is already building an American fan base. One of the people who was impressed by Kasumba's videos is baseball fan and lawyer Joshua William from Atlanta in the U.S. state of Georgia, who spoke to VOA via Zoom.
My sons play travel baseball, and we were traveling for a tournament down in Florida, and I was just scrolling through my phone, and I saw one of Kasumba's videos and was just like, wow, this kid is really good. And so I just kind of reached out to him through Facebook, and we started talking, and he started telling me his dreams of, you know, how he wants to play baseball professionally.
Since then, William has been working hard for Kasumba to get a U.S. visa so he can travel to play in the MLB Draft League. Back home, Sempa John Bosco, a baseball coach, says he's worked with Kasumba for a couple of years despite big challenges.
Baseball equipment are scarce in the country. We just get them through donations from friends who see what we do, and they provide this equipment to us. So when it comes to gym work, it is expensive for us to go to gym. You have to pay a lot of money. So we have to improvise just like you see Kasumba.
Uganda is home to only two baseball fields, including one donated by Japan and American donors. After having three U.S. visa applications denied, on Thursday, Lady Luck finally smiled upon Kasumba, who got the visa. He can now prepare to leave Uganda to play in the U.S. over the summer and work toward his goal of being a professional baseball player. Halima Athmani for VA News, Wakiso.
Over the weekend, the BAL kicked off its playoff in Kigali, Rwanda. The clash of the Sahara and Nile conferences began on Saturday, and to say it wasn't eventful is speaking of it very lightly. In the studio, I have sports analyst my colleague, Mokbili Abaro, to give us a recap of the games. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thank you for having me, Hayes.
So, Mokbil, can you go over the results of the BAL playoff results for us?
Yes, Stade Malien from Mali defeated the Cape Town Tigers 78-69 in the first game. Al Ahly from Egypt beat Rwanda Energy Group 94-77. AS Douan 93-73 against Mozambican side CFV Beira. And Petro de Luanda, the Angolan side, in a thrilling game, beat Abidjan Basketball Club Ivory Coast side 88-84. Came down to the wire.
Came down to the wire. So now what are the matchups for the next round and how do you think they turned out?
I believe the next matchups will be Petro de Luanda versus AS Douan and Stade Malien versus Al Ahly. Man, these are going to be two exciting teams, Yeheyes. You have two Nile Conference teams and two Sahara Conference teams showing us that both the Nile Conference and the Sahara Conference are both equally matched. And honestly, it's exciting. Stade Malien and Al Ahly both debutant teams. First time in the competition, making it all the way to the to this round of the playoffs. If with one more win, both teams are in the finals.
Who are some key players from the teams that have advanced?
So I would say, keeping it with Stade Malien, you have Aliou Diarra and Solomon Berthe, two young studs from the Stade Malien side. For the Petro de Luanda side, I would say Carlos Moraes and Diabate. From the AS Douanes side, you have Marcus Crawford. And last but definitely not least, for Al Ahly, you have the young stunner. His name is Nouni Omat from South Sudan. He's been balling out.
I like the name, Nouni Omat.
Yes, sir.
Lastly, what are your predictions on the upcoming games?
Honestly, yes, this is going to be tough. You know, I actually had a conversation with our colleague, Sheikh Tiero, the big man. He's over in Kigali, Rwanda, and we were talking about this as well. It's anyone's match. The beauty of this tournament, especially this season, is that you have a plethora of skilled teams, a plethora of skilled players, and it's very difficult to call because any single game is exactly what it is. It's just a one-game knockout type of style. It's not a series like the NBA. So because of that, you know, if you just come in and you play your style of the game defensively, I think it's going to come down to defense. If you're able to defend the correct way, then you will win. If I had to put a prediction, you know, I don't like these, but if I had to,
yes, please.
I would have to say that Petro de Luanda, you know, having had the experience, the Angolan side, this is their third time playing in this tournament. So this might be their, you know, their go around. The first season, they didn't go too far. Last season, they went all the way to the finals and lost to U.S. Monastir. This season might be their season where they take everything. So Petro, possibly.
Possibly.
We will see, man.
But who do you think will be in the finals and potentially win the BAL season 3?
Yeah, like, so if I'm rolling with Petro on one side against AS Douanes, which is obviously still a very, very skilled team as well, so I can't knock them out. But if I were to say Petro from that side, this Stade Malien and Al Ahly team, man, it's tough. This one, I would say, man, maybe Al Ahly. Maybe Al Ahly. And then that would potentially be a rematch from the toughest, most closest game that we've had in the tournament that went down to a buzzer beater between Petro de Luanda and Al Ahly. We get to see the two teams go back at it again. It's going to be exciting.
A plethora of talents. VOA sports analyst Mokbili Abaro, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Beckford, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.